At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Okay, let's set the scene. It's 1947, April 3rd. We're on a grimy street corner in the Bronx. Think exhaust fumes, damp concrete smell, that constant city rumble in the background. Then tires screech, an NYPD squad car slams to a halt.
Standard stuff for the era, especially that part of town.
Right, detectives pile out, moving fast, like they've done this a million times, and boom, they've got their guy, cuffs click. Another mob arrest, you'd think.
But this is where it gets weird, immediately.
Exactly. This isn't your typical sharp-suited gangster chewing a cigar. No, this guy, Lester Milano, has a raw carrot sticking out of his mouth, like half-eaten.
Mid-snack, apparently.
Mid-snack. And his hands, his fingernails, they're just caked thick with dirt, like serious, deep grime. You look at him, cuffs on, carrot in his mouth, dirt everywhere, and you just think, what is this? It doesn't fit the picture at all.
And that's what's so fascinating. Right from that first image in the NYPD arrest report, that snapshot, it's just, it perfectly captures the whole paradox of Lester Bugs Milano.
How so?
Well, you've got the arrest, obviously, serious crime involved. But then you have these almost, I don't know, whimsical details. The carrot, the dirt. It's like he wandered in from a completely different story.
Like a farmer got lost on the way to the market.
Kind of, yeah. And it's not just a funny detail. It's this immediate visual contradiction that tells you right away, this guy isn't straightforward. He defies easy labels from the get-go. He's an enigma, basically, wrapped in soil and vegetables.
Exactly. And that enigma, that whole contradiction, that's what we're diving into today. We're going deep into the sources, the police reports. Yeah. But also, Tremont Crew wiretaps, court testimonies, even these really dry but weirdly revealing 1954 prison farm logs.
Oh, yeah, the tunnel sightings?
Right. We want to understand the man behind the nickname Bugs, and maybe more importantly, the man behind the shovel. Was he just, you know, a cog in the machine, a really, really weird but efficient mob fixer?
Or something else entirely.
Or was he something stranger, maybe darker, like an obsessive subterranean artist, someone whose real drive wasn't crime but digging? Stick with us, because you're going to have some definite aha moments. His story is just wilder than fiction.
And the real challenge for us, and for you listening, is trying to square those things. Mm-hmm. How do you reconcile the sort of mundane, almost silly details, the carrots, the whistling we'll get into, with the incredibly grim reality of what he actually did?
Yeah, it messes with your head a bit.
It forces you to question assumptions, you know, about criminals, about motivation. Was that whole persona just an act? A kind of psychological shield? Or was it somehow genuine, an expression of some deep, unsettling drive? That's the puzzle we're trying to piece together.
Okay, so let's dig in, pardon the pun.
Unavoidable, I guess.
Sources show Milano wasn't just muscle or some general purpose hood. He had this very specific job with the Tremont Crew in the Bronx. Now, the Tremont guys, they weren't exactly subtle operators, pretty ruthless bunch.
Pragmatic is a good word for them.
Right. But for Milano, they carved out this unique role. He wasn't a hitman. He didn't pull triggers. He wasn't intimidating people on street corners. His job title, effectively, was disposer.
Let's think about that. A disposer.
Yeah. How common is that in organized crime? To have one guy whose sole job is getting rid of the evidence, the bodies. It says something about the Tremont Crew, doesn't it? Either the sheer volume of their dirty work.
Or their absolute obsession with discretion. Maybe both.
It suggests they had so many problems needing permanent solutions that they needed a specialist full time.
And the fact they had such a specialist is chilling in itself. Most crews, you know, the guys who do the wet work also handle the cleanup as part of the grim package deal.
Right.
But to have a dedicated disposer, it implies this almost industrial scale of finality, like a production line for making people vanish. So was Milano just incredibly good at it? A master of this awful craft?
Or was it something else?
Or... and this gets into the psychology. Did his unique skill set, maybe even his obsession, dictate the role? Did they see this guy who was weirdly good at and maybe even liked digging and just utilize that as this cold, chilling pragmatism? They had a problem. He was the quiet, carrot-chewing solution, the ultimate cleaner.
And what a solution he was, his whole persona. I mean, the witness statements, the old news reports, they paint a picture that's just bizarre, like something out of a dark Looney Tune.
It really is striking.
Get this. Never seen with a weapon. No gun, no knife, nothing you'd expect. His standard gear, a shovel, always looking well used, and a sack. A sack of raw vegetables.
Carrots, celery, turnips sometimes, according to one report.
Yeah, and he'd show up to these, let's be blunt, clandestine burials, whistling a cheerful tune like he's off to plant some daisies, not bury a body.
The dirt under the nails, too. Always there.
Yeah.
Like a permanent feature.
And that carrot. Always chewing a carrot. Witnesses said, like it was a fine cigar. You could apparently hear him crunching away. It's so visual and audible. Almost surreal. How did this act, this whole package, help him operate? Was it deliberate camouflage, making himself seem harmless?
That's a really key question. Because in that world, you expect menace, right?
Mm-hmm.
Threats, intimidation, the bulge of a gun. Milano offered the opposite. This almost like cheerful normalcy.
Which is maybe creepier.
Exactly. There's that idea that sometimes you see it in the fiction, but it applies here.
Mm-hmm.
The wrong emotion at the wrong time is way scarier than just open panic or anger. His seeming good cheer, his mundane habits, it would totally disarm people.
They'd see Bugs the rabbit, not Lester the disposer.
Precisely. Was he disassociating? Just mentally checked out, allowing him to do these horrible things while seeming calm? Or was it a strategy, a conscious choice to seem goofy, harmless, forgettable, until it was way too late? That contradiction, appearance versus reality, that's the core of his chilling effectiveness. He wasn't scary because he was tough. He was scary because he was so unsettlingly normal while doing the unspeakable.
Like a cheerful gardener of the dead.
That's a good way to put it, actually.
And the way this persona worked connects directly to the grimace part. We see this in the wiretaps, the informant chatter from the Tremont crew. At first, apparently, there were jokes about him. His nickname's Bugs, the rabbit. His own crew gave him those, you know, dark humor.
Yeah, well, it was humor, yeah.
But the sources say those jokes dried up. They turn into this uncomfortable silence. Because, and this phrase comes up again and again, chillingly simple, then those guys stop showing up. Think about that simple equation. Whistling guy with a shovel and a carrot shows up. Soon after, someone disappears. Forever. That casual, almost cartoonish persona becomes absolutely terrifying when you link it directly to the finality of his work. It's like a nursery rhyme about vanishing.
It really is. And the fact that his whole eccentric act was so disarming, so seemingly innocent, that's what makes it profoundly disturbing.
Yeah.
People just didn't register the danger until someone was physically gone.
Underestimated him completely.
It's a unique kind of intimidation, isn't it? Not
that.
Through force, but through this weird contradiction that just scrambled people's threat assessment. They might have even found him funny, this oddball character, right up to the moment of truth. And the way he just normalized it, the whistling, the snacking,
right.
It normalized the act of human erasure. That must have been psychologically brutal for anyone who understood what he was really doing.
And the scale of it. When the feds finally nabbed him that April morning in 47, it wasn't some dramatic showdown. Reports say he just went quiet.
Almost anticlimactic, the arrest itself.
Yeah, but what came next was staggering. With this peculiar calm, apparently, he led the investigators straight to 17 shallow graves. 17.
17.
This wasn't some desperate one-time disposal. This was methodical. This was practice. This was practically a career. 17 people ended and then meticulously hidden. It just screams repetition routine almost.
And what's fascinating, looking at the FBI interrogation notes, is why he showed them all 17. It wasn't like a broken man confessing under pressure.
No.
One agent wrote, it felt like, and this is a quote, a strange sort of exhibitionism. Like he wanted them to see the full extent. Was it resignation? Like, okay, you got me, here it all is. Or was it something weirder, like a twisted pride in his work, a desire to have his unique talent fully recognized?
His grim portfolio.
Exactly. It wasn't just covering tracks, it felt like an unveiling.
Yeah.
17 implies such a deep immersion in this specific awful craft. Way beyond just a job. It points to this long-term, sustained, maybe even compulsive focus on burying on a moving earth.
And then there's the detail that just pushes it further into the surreal. Around some of those graves, the forensics teams found rotting carrot ends.
Ugh.
Right. Imagine this scene. Crime scene tape, investigators carefully working, the grim reality of discovery, and scattered around are these half-eaten bits of carrot. It just hits you. What's going on in his head? Was he literally just snacking while he worked, taking a carrot break mid-burial?
It's such a mundane detail in the middle of pure horror.
It adds this layer of just grotesque normalcy.
It's so powerful because you can read it two ways, both equally unsettling, option one, It's just a habit. Comfort food while doing hard physical work. It kind of normalizes the act, makes burying someone seem like any other chore, you know,
yeah.
Time for a snack.
Which is horrifying in itself.
Absolutely. But option two, if you connect it back to the whole Bugs persona, the whistling, the nickname, maybe the carrot isn't just a snack. Maybe it's part of the ritual, a signature.
Like leaving a calling card, sort of. It suggests a deeper psychological engagement. It's not just a job. It has its own rhythm, its own satisfaction, maybe?
Huh.
The carrot becomes an emblem of the rabbit doing his work. It's this quiet little marker of his presence, consistently there.
Okay, but this next detail, this one really got me. It hints at something beyond just disposal, maybe towards that obsession idea. One of the 17 graves, according to the reports, was different. It had, and this is the quote, a tunnel system, like he was practicing.
Yes. The practice tunnel.
Now, my first thought was practical. Maybe it helped hide the grave better, or made it easier to dig deeper. You know, just a mob fixer optimizing his technique, making disposal more efficient, more foolproof. Just part of the job, right?
That's the logical first step, thinking about efficiency. Any criminal wants to be better at hiding things. But that phrase, like he was practicing, it just hangs there, doesn't it?
Yeah, what was he practicing for? Exactly. If it's just about getting rid of a body, a simple hole does the job. Why, a tunnel system. That goes way beyond basic utility. It suggests he was exploring something, playing with the earth in a way that wasn't strictly necessary for the task at hand.
Like it was interesting to him for its own sake?
That's what it implies. Criminologists talk about a signature, something the offender does that isn't needed to commit the crime, but fulfills some psychological need. This feels like that. It hints at a compulsion, a fascination with digging and tunneling that went deeper than just his job for the Tremont crew. It's almost like that grave was his secret workshop.
A subterranean laboratory.
Yeah. A clue, really, about what truly drove him. It shifts the balance away from just efficient fixer towards obsessive digger.
And his behavior in court, just as weird, the trial transcripts paint this picture of him just smile the whole time.
Constant smile. Unsettled.
Soulfully. While all these gruesome details are coming out. And then he says that thing to the judge, apparently, very calmly. Said he just liked digging better than going underground the other way, he told the judge.
Yeah. Chilling line.
My first take. Bravado.
Yeah.
Pure mobster defiance. He's cooked, so he puts on a show. Makes a dark joke about death. Just a weird crook trying to look tough, you know?
I think we have to push back on that interpretation, though. Because the smile plus that specific quote, it doesn't feel like just bravado. It feels almost like serenity or a weird kind of pleasure in his own unique skill.
How do you mean?
Going underground the other way. It's loaded. Sure, it could mean dying, going into a coffin, the obvious interpretation.
Right.
But it could also mean his way of going underground, escaping capture, living beneath the surface, his preferred state of being. Was he hinting that digging for him wasn't just a job or even just about death, but a genuine passion, a better way to live, literally underground.
Wow, okay.
That leans right into the obsessive subterranean artist idea. Maybe the smile wasn't defiance, but contentment, like he'd found his calling, even if society called it monstrous and put him on trial for it. The better way was his way, the way of the digger.
And it turns out he meant it literally. Because despite the smile, despite the weird quotes, the court wasn't amused. Life in prison. End of story for Lester Milana, right? The Grim Rabbit is caged for good.
You'd think so.
Nope. True to form, Bugs had other plans. Those prison farm logs from 1954, they show he escaped just 6 months later. 6 months. And how?
Let me guess.
He dug his way out. Dug out beneath the prison garden. Classic Bugs Milano. Now, okay, any escape like that takes serious guts, planning, skill. You could just say he was a desperate, resourceful criminal fighting for freedom.
Which is true, on one level.
It's a really determined inmate pulling off a tough escape.
But connect it back. Connected to the practice tunnel at the gravesite. Connected to him telling the judge he liked digging and preferred going underground the other way.
Right.
This wasn't just a desperate scramble for freedom.
You think it was more?
I think it was the ultimate expression of his lifelong compulsion. The practice payoff. The prison logs, apparently, describe the tunnel wasn't just some rough hole. It showed care, structure. It reinforces the idea that digging wasn't just what he did. It was who he was.
It was his art form.
Exactly. His entire known life revolves around this single powerful drive.
Yeah.
The escape wasn't just getting out. It was him fulfilling his nature, using his core skill to achieve freedom, literally becoming one with the earth to disappear. It's his ultimate statement.
And the aftermath, perfect Milano. He vanished completely, never caught again. And the only thing they found in his empty cell.
The carrot.
Single carrot wedged in the bars. It's almost funny again, right? So bizarre. It's like a final defiant message. Catch me if you can. A last laugh from this super weird criminal. A taunt.
It's definitely a taunt. But I think it's more than just a taunt. It's like his final signature. A statement of identity.
Oh, so.
The carrot was there when he was arrested. It was there at the gravesite, part of his working persona. And now, it's the symbol of his freedom. It ties everything together. It says his digging, his whole subterranean existence, wasn't just a means to an end, getting rid of bodies, escaping prison. It was fundamental to who he was.
It was him.
Exactly. That carrot connects the crime, the compulsion, and the escape. And it makes you wonder, what happens when someone's deepest, maybe darkest obsession becomes the very key to their freedom? For Bugs Milano, going underground wasn't hiding. It was, as he said, a better way. It was his chosen state of being.
So that leaves us wrestling with this core contradiction, doesn't it? This question that just hangs there. Was Lester Bugs Milano just a really, really strange but effective mob fixer? A guy with some bizarre habits who did a dirty job well.
The pragmatic, albeit peculiar, criminal.
Or was he driven by something deeper? An obsessive fascination with digging, with the earth, with moving unseen beneath the surface. Did that compulsion define him more than the crimes themselves, ultimately becoming his path to freedom? What do you think, listening to all this? The carrots, the whistling, the 17 bodies, the practice tunnels, the smile, the escape, that final carrot. Where do you land?
And it really highlights how sometimes the most mundane things, a carrot, dirt under the nails, can clues.
Oh.
Clues to understanding some really profound and frankly disturbing psychological depths.
Mm-hmm.
Milano forces you to look past the crime itself and think about the complex, maybe even primal, drives behind it. He's not just a true crime figure. He's this phenomenon, a life literally intertwined with the ground beneath our feet.
Yeah, because there's no neat ending here. No final chapter where justice is served or all questions are answered. He was never caught. He just vanished. Disappeared back into the earth, you could almost say.
His natural habitat.
And it leaves you with that final thought, that quote to the judge. In a world where people go underground to hide, to bury things, Milano went underground because it was a better way. What does that really mean? When someone's life, their crimes, their escape, their whole identity seems defined by the dirt in the tunnels, by this pull towards the subterranean.
It's a question that sticks with you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Long after the case files are closed and the dirt has settled, it resonates in a really unsettling way when you think about the hidden corners of human nature.
Well, that's our deep dive into the truly curious, compelling, and deeply strange case of Lester Bugs Milano. Thanks for digging in with us.